From Washington, this is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. Zimbabweans are hoping for a speedy and smooth resolution to their nation's sudden political crisis as opposition figures, civil society, and religious groups urge longtime President Robert Mugabe to step down in the wake of military takeovers.
Some key figures in Zimbabwe's opposition are proposing a transitional government ahead of the elections already planned for next year. Opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai on Thursday urged Mr. Mugabe to resign.
Taking full regard of his legacy and a contribution to Zimbabwe.
The vice president Mugabe recently fired, arguably the catalyst for this military takeover, has kept a low profile. Emerson Mnangagwa, says Piers Pigou of the International Crisis Group, will lose credibility if he appears too close to the military.
It is absolutely critical for the new incumbents to be able to, I suppose, distance themselves as quickly as possible from the illegal actions of the armed forces here.
But Chitio says the negotiators have a lot to discuss. The crisis came out of a long-running, bitter rift in the ruling ZANU-PF party, which Mugabe has led for decades. Observers saw the move to fire Mnangagwa as a step toward the installation of Mugabe's wife, Grace Mugabe, as vice president. That would have put the unpopular first lady next in line, behind her 93-year-old husband. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
A lengthy investigation has led to the arrest of nearly 300 people said to be associated with the violent gang MS-13, a group U.S. President Donald Trump has said America should be rid of. Led by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the operation swept up 214 MS-13 members in the United States, 53 members in El Salvador, the gang's home base. This is VOA News. Nine United States-funded news organizations are targeted in a new Russian legislation.
The bill comes in response to U.S. demands that Russian state-funded RTTV register as a foreign agent. The Justice Ministry said Thursday it has notified the U.S. government-funded Voice of America and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, along with its regional outlets, that they could be designated as foreign agents under the new law. The bill was endorsed by Russia's lower house on Wednesday, but needs to be approved by the upper house and signed by President Vladimir Putin to become law. Philip Alexio, VOA News.
The U.S. House of Representatives passed significant changes to the nation's tax code for the first time in three decades and by a comfortable vote margin Thursday, giving President Donald Trump and congressional Republicans a much-needed win after a year of legislative setbacks. House Speaker Paul Ryan's long-held goal of reforming the nation's tax code appeared in jeopardy earlier this year after Republicans tried and failed to deliver on another long-term campaign promise that's repealing and replacing former President Barack Obama's Affordable Care Act. After the vote, Ryan said this bill would help America's poor.
We ask the people of this country who are struggling, give us a chance to make good by you. Give us a chance to make lives better for you. Give us a chance to improve your life. This conference today did one of the greatest things we could possibly do to make good on that promise, and I'm so proud.
In the Senate, both Democrats and Republicans have expressed some skepticism about this plan, with Democrats calling it a tax break for the wealthy. Democratic U.S. Senator Al Franken of the state of Minnesota has apologized and asked for an ethics investigation of his actions after a Los Angeles newscaster Thursday accused him of groping and aggressively kissing her in 2006, 2 years before he was elected. Hours earlier, former TV host and Playboy model Leanne Tweeden said while traveling with Franken on a goodwill trip to entertain American troops in the Middle East, Franken kissed and groped her without her consent, and she said there was nothing funny about it. A drone has landed three journalists and their driver in jail after Myanmar authorities say they violated its import-export law. They brought the drone into the country as part of a documentary that they were doing for Turkish state television TRT. They already have been sentenced to 2 months in jail on a summary conviction for breaking the country's 1934 aircraft law. But it says the journalists obtained all required permits to do their story, but the arresting officer said they had not declared the drone when they entered the country. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, November 17th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Regional envoys meet with President Robert Mugabe as Zimbabwe's main opposition leader comments for the first time on the military crisis.
We note, of course, that the end game, the destination point to the resolution of this crisis in Zimbabwe, is a total return to legitimacy and a full civilian rule through a credible, free and fair election under an independent internationally supervised body.
Morgan Tsvangirai is the leader of Zimbabwe's main opposition movement for democratic change. Zimbabwe's former colonial power, Britain, urges peaceful change after the military took over. Another protest is planned for today in Togo, as the opposition says Ghana has offered to mediate. And Liberia's Electoral Commission says it has time to dispose of all ongoing legal challenges.
Liberty Party complained on the 23rd of October. So by the 22nd of November, the 1 month will have elapsed. So we still have time.
John Flomo is the spokesman for the National Elections Commission of Liberia. And a Sierra Leone opposition leader is displeased with former Vice President Sam Soumana's legal action against his own country. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Zimbabwe's 93-year-old president, Robert Mugabe, was put under house arrest during a military takeover on Wednesday, aimed at putting down a power struggle over who would succeed Mugabe. On Wednesday, a delegation of regional envoys met in Harare with Mr. Mugabe and the army chief. But sources say Mr. Mugabe has so far refused to agree to step down. Meanwhile, and as we hear from reporter Kuzaye Zvanavashi in Harare, main opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai Wednesday commented for the first time on the crisis.
Zimbabwe has been in political limbo since the army took power earlier this week. Much of the world press is calling it a coup, but the army generals are adamant that it is not. They say they are rounding up criminals in President Mugabe's government, a term many believe refers to allies of the First Lady, Grace Mugabe. Until Thursday, the opposition had largely been silent. Morgan Tsvangirai is the leader of Zimbabwe's main opposition, the Movement for Democratic Change. He returned this week from South Africa, where he was being treated for cancer, and addressed journalists at a press conference. He questioned the legality of Mugabe's current government.
You know, in 2013, the dispute around the elections was that Mugabe was illegitimate. We have maintained that position. So whatever solution you want to bring, illegitimate or otherwise, still comes to the same. We note, of course, that the end game, the destination point to the resolution of this crisis in Zimbabwe, is a total return to legitimacy and a fully civilian rule through a credible, free and fair election under an independent internationally supervised body.
Tsvangirai adds that in the interest of the people, Mugabe must resign and pave way for a transitional mechanism roadmap that will ultimately lead to elections. He says this should be underwritten by international and regional bodies. The military has told the public that the situation will normalize once they have rooted out criminal characters in government. Tsvangirai poured cold water on speculation that the army has approached him to be part of the transitional government.
I have stated that the solution to the national crisis needs all stakeholders, which means that if we are approached to negotiate such a process, we will participate in that process. But for now, I think it is still speculation. But at the moment, nothing has been initiated yet.
Many observers say the military action amounts to a coup. The army and Tsvangirai disagree.
Well, what is a coup? What is a military takeover? As far as I am concerned, any unconstitutional means donates a situation in which anyone can conclude. I know that the military have said it's not a coup, and we believe them. We hope they will be able to extricate themselves out of that definition.
Tsvangirai encouraged people to take part in the ongoing voter registration process, and his party has been pushing towards a grand coalition that will be made up of most opposition political parties. Patson Zamara is a human rights activist. His brother Itai Zamara, an activist and journalist, disappeared in 2015 after calling for Mugabe to leave office.
I wish to commend him for expressing a willingness to engage all the other parties and stakeholders towards the formulation of a better Zimbabwe.
This story has been developing fast. Earlier in the week, a ZANU-PF Youth League leader, Kudzai Chipanga, accused the army commander, General Constantino Chiwenga, of treason by threatening the use of military power to settle political disputes. He apologized to Chiwenga on the state TV Wednesday, saying he was young and his utterances were misguided. For now, all hangs in the balance with uncertainty over how it will all end. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
Britain, the former colonial power in Zimbabwe, has urged restraint following the apparent ouster of the country's president, Robert Mugabe. A former leader in Zimbabwe's fight for independence in the 1970s, Mugabe has had an increasingly fraught relationship with Britain, which, along with the U.S. and European allies, accuses the 93-year-old leader of directing widespread human rights abuses. Henry Richwell reports from London.
Outside the Zimbabwean embassy in London, celebrations have begun among some opposition supporters as the Mugabe era appears to be nearing its end.
We really appreciate what he had done before, but unfortunately, he couldn't make a good move when he was supposed to step down. He should have stepped down a long time ago.
Instead, Robert Mugabe has clung to power for close to four decades, routinely crushing political dissent. Following election violence in 2002, Britain and the European Union imposed a travel ban on the president. His apparent ouster should be treated with caution, argues analyst Nick Branson of the Africa Research Institute.
There's a need for cool heads and some back-channeling and some, you know, quite quiet discussions behind the scenes rather than megaphone diplomacy, which is what Britain has historically fallen into.
Britain's foreign secretary offered this reaction to the military takeover.
Nobody wants simply to see the transition from one unelected tyrant to the next. No one wants to see that. We want to see proper, free and fair elections next year, and that's what we will be working towards.
Restraint was urged by the European Union.
The fundamental rights of all the citizens need to be respected and the constitutional order and democratic governance to be upheld.
Veterans of Zimbabwe's struggle for independence remain the driving force within the ruling ZANU-PF. Among them, former Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa, viewed as heir apparent until his firing last week by President Mugabe. This apparently triggered the military takeover.
They're merely trying to manage the transition, having clearly been quite alarmed by his sidelining of Emmerson Mnangagwa and working on the assumption that he was going to try and install Grace Mugabe, who has no Liberation War credentials.
Those credentials led Mugabe to power. Now fellow veterans have decided his time is up. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 17th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 13 and a half minutes past the hour. Togo's coalition of 14 political parties is gearing up for another protest today, Friday, and tomorrow, Saturday, to push their demand for a return to the country's 1992 constitution, which calls for a 2 5-year term limit for presidents. They also want President Faure Gnassingbé, who, together with his late father, have ruled the country for 50 years, to step down. The government wants to hold a referendum to adopt reforms, including a limitation of presidential terms. But the proposed changes would not be retroactive, allowing President Gnassingbé to run for another term in 2020 and 2025. Meanwhile, the president of neighboring Ghana has offered to facilitate a dialogue. Bridget Ajamagbo is coordinator of the coalition of 14 political parties that is spearheading the protest. She says the opposition will continue to protest until its demands are met.
We continue to protest because we are in democracy, and the big majority, I must say that even all the Togolese now want that the constitution that we voted for, they want a return back of this constitution. And we are sure that if we continue to protest, the government will finish by the stand. what we are asking for. You know, there is a saying that people's voice is God's voice.
So, did the government offer to negotiate with you?
Well, I have to tell you that first, the government has released a communique saying that he was willing to call the opposition for a dialogue. They released part of demonstrators that has been arrested, and they say that they are willing to discuss with us. And after this communique, the president of Ghana sent a delegation Monday to discuss with the opposition on what could be the framework, because the president of Ghana is offering to be a facilitator. And we started to discuss on what could be the framework of the dialogue, and we had to respond to some questions, namely, who will be the participants to the dialogue. And for us, we told them very clearly that we, the coalition of 14 political opposition parties, would be the one who will discuss with the government. We agreed that a preparatory committee would be set up maybe next week.
So, Bridget, I mean, you are calling for President Faure Gnassingbé to step down. What would you accept as an outcome of a possible dialogue?
We are asking for the return back of our constitution, the constitution that we voted for. We are asking before this that the government release all the demonstrators that have been arrested, because we still have around 100 still in prison. We want them to be released. We want our Togolese citizens from Sokode, from Bafilo, from Mongo, which are some cities from the northern part of the country where the president comes from. We want those citizens to be able also to enjoy their rights to protest. Because I must tell you that the government is saying now that they will not allow protests to be in those three cities. And this, we don't accept it. So you can see that there is a reason for us to continue to protest, because to date, we are not sure that the government will release all the persons arrested.
Bridget Ajamagbo is the coordinator of a coalition of 14 political parties leading protests in Togo. She was speaking with me from the capital, Lomé. The leader of Sierra Leone's opposition Alliance Democratic Party says he's displeased with former Vice President Samuel Sam Sumana's decision to file a lawsuit against Sierra Leone at the ECOWAS Regional Court. Mr. Sumana says he went to the court because he was illegally removed from his position as the constitutionally elected vice president. The ECOWAS Court is expected to rule on the former vice president's petition before the end of this month. But opposition leader Mohamed Kamarahimba Masare tells viewers Peter Clotty that it was unacceptable for the former vice president to take the country to court, particularly when the former vice president is trying to become a candidate in next year's presidential election.
I condemned the former vice president Sam Sumana's action to take the country to the ECOWAS court. He already did, according to recent report. On the 22nd of this month, the ECOWAS court will give a verdict of the matter. So I condemned, I've already wrote a letter to the ECOWAS court as a leader and a political party that we condemn the action that the former vice president did, took the country for over $200 million. And we are going to do everything in our power so that Sam Sumana action can tell every Sierra Leonean that he is not a patriotic person.
Why are you defending an illegality that a lot of Sierra Leoneans say was committed against Sam Sumana when he was removed or sacked from his position as the legitimately elected vice president of the Federal Republic of Sierra Leone?
I was the one that took the urge to go around and even was going to demonstrate about the illegal way it was removed.
Mohamed Kamaraimba Masarez, the leader of Sierra Leone's opposition alliance, Democratic Party, he spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Freetown. The spokesman for the National Elections Commission of Liberia says the commission still has time under the constitution to dispose of ongoing legal challenges to the country's October 10th presidential election brought by four opposition parties. The Supreme Court this month ordered a stay on a runoff election that should have been held on November 7th until the commission can investigate the allegations of irregularities. Today, Friday, the Supreme Court of Liberia is expected to rule on a bill of information requested by the ruling Unity Party, one of the complainants, on whether the Elections Commission is withholding information. But John Flomo, the spokesman for the Elections Commission, says it is committed to resolving all complaints in time so that Liberians can have a chance to decide who their next leader will be.
At the National Elections Commission, we are continuing the various cases, especially the case involving Liberty Party / Unity Party and MEC. In the words of the Supreme Court, we need to expeditiously dispose of the case. So that's what we've been doing exactly. Hearings going on every day, with the exception of Sunday. And by His grace, we can do it as soon as possible. But we had to take a few hours break today to go at the Supreme Court to answer to a bill of information that was filed by the co-complainant, Unity Party. It was about whether we are holding on to rulings or information. And, of course, our lawyers made a very good presentation. And the results are expected today, 2 o'clock. As usual, we are committed to making sure that these matters are disposed of, so that a final decision can be made as to whether the Liberian people can make a decision on who is their leader for the next 6 years.
All this is happening, Mr. Flomo, when the U.S. Embassy in Liberia issued a statement on Wednesday, in fact saying that the conduct of the October 10th election was acceptable. What is the reaction from the Elections Commission to the U.S. Embassy's statement?
Well, I would term that as a validation and more or less a confirmation, because the National Election Commission, through its chairman, Councillor Jerome Kokoya, has maintained that in spite of few challenges, the elections were credible. They were free, fair, and transparent. And other international bodies came out to say that. National, international, media people come out to say that. But yes, again, these are fundamental rights. These are part of our rule of law. People have their rights to challenge the process. You know, so for the U.S. Embassy to have supported exactly what our chairman said, I think it just goes further to support that we did our best. Yes, we have one or two problems, but they were not targeted at particular individuals or parties. We said that over and over. So out of 2.1 million, very close to 1.7 million people came out. The first time in the history of this country that people were so enthusiastic to come out and make a decision as to who would lead them. I thought we were then praised by some of the people, but to try to bring us down, I mean, we thought it was not fair, but again, it is part of the process. The matters arising from the elections, you know, we were prepared for it. This is why we even recruited routine lawyers, hearing clerks all around the country. And that's why the laws were even made. The fact that the laws have provision for hearing matters arising from elections, it tells you that we are not surprised. But to be honest, the statement from the U.S. Embassy was greeted with happiness, not only from the neck, because I read all of the papers on Thursday in Liberia. Almost every newspaper used their front pages to highlight the statement by the U.S. Embassy.
I know you don't want to preempt the High Court. Is it likely that when the court rules today, Friday, that it is probably going to be a comprehensive ruling that deals with the petition as well as whether the runoff election should be scheduled?
No, because I'm not sure about that. I'm not a lawyer, but at the Supreme Court, I listened to the arguments today. And the Supreme Court maintains that they cannot rule on the matter because they don't have the matter yet. The matter, whether there will be rerun or there will be runoff, is still at the level of the National Elections Commission hearing office. If it's one o'clock Liberty Party complaint on the 23rd of October. So by the 22nd of November, the 1 month will have elapsed, so we still have time.
That was John Flomo, spokesperson for the National Elections Commission of Liberia. He was speaking with me from the capital, Monrovia. It is 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you, James. We begin with the qualifiers for the 2018 Russia World Cup. All the 32 countries that will participate in next summer's football festival became known after Peru became the last team to qualify for the World Cup, courtesy of their 2-0 win over New Zealand in the second leg of their playoff on Thursday morning. Nigeria, Egypt, Morocco, Tunisia and Senegal will represent Africa at the Mondial. Yemi Kosoko, a sport analyst and a radio commentator, told Daybreak Africa that African teams to the World Cup have the potentials to go far in the tournament.
The qualification of the North Africans, looking at three as against two from the West Africans, is an indication that the North Africans are back in the football business in Africa. After the Arab Springs, they have been able to put their acts together. I want to believe that the five teams from Africa should be able to give a good account of themselves. I see Morocco doing well. Nigeria, too, will be able to do well at the World Cup.
The draws will be held on the 1st of December 2017 at the State Kremlin Palace in Moscow. And all is now set for today's draws for the 2018 CAF Total Chan Tournament, scheduled to be hosted by Morocco. CAF had seeded the teams ahead of the draws, with a host of Morocco seeded alongside Ivory Coast, Angola and Libya. Last edition host Rwanda are in pot three with Congo, Uganda and Sudan. The defending champion are DRC, who are not participating. And staying with CAF, 34-year-old Egyptian national Amir Fahmy has been appointed the new Confederation of African Football Secretary General. Fahmy succeeds 37-year-old Moroccan Hisham El Amrani, who quit this year following the defeat of former CAF boss Issa Hayatou by Ahmed Ahmed in March. Canada-based Liberian grassroots football coach Ansumana Keita has described the Monrovia Football Academy's recent participation in its first international tournament as a boost to youth football development in Liberia. Coach Keita, master sports at Paris Saint-Germain in Canada, said the experience gained by the kids of the academy at the recent international tournament is an added advantage to their soccer career. He said there is a need for additional youth development programs in the country amid the continuous growth of youth football. In international table tennis news, Nigeria's Aaron Akwadri continued his unbeaten run in the knockout stage of the preliminary round of the ITTF World Tour tagged Swedish Open, beating Hong Kong's Kit Horn, who 4-2 to qualify into the main draw of the men's single. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Zimbabwe's 93-year-old President Robert Mugabe was put under house arrest during an apparent military takeover on Wednesday aimed at putting down a power struggle over who would succeed Mr. Mugabe. That's it for this Friday, November 17th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good weekend.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of the VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
Music time in Africa. Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in. Feast your ears and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. You Music Time in Africa, Friday at 0900 and Saturday and Sunday at 0900, 15, 20, and 2200 hours UTC. See.